from NPR Music. I'm Bob Boylan.
I'm Jacob Gans.
And we've just experienced a, well, I was going to say a week, but it's been the last 3 days of Moogfest.
Just 3 days.
And Jacob and I are sitting at the end of Moogfest, which is in Asheville, North Carolina, sitting in a room that is filled with the music of Brian Eno. It's music that is on a handful of CD players around the room. They're all on random repeat with different parts in all of them. And the most beautiful array of computer screens. It's a piece called 77 Million Paintings that Brian Eno installed here. And it's been my fabulous sort of go-to place.
It's called 77 Million Paintings, we should say, because the images on the screen sort of shift very slowly in a way that there's a countless number of combinations that you can see, different colors and different different sort of textures on the screens. And he said when we saw him speak earlier this weekend that at this point there are something like 10 billion combinations.
Right.
It's much, much higher than 77 million at this point. But it's beautiful and it's sort of tranquil and in the middle of this crazy electronic music festival.
It's fantastic. And Brian Eno was a guest speaker here, as well as this installation. He wasn't a performer, but he has influenced so many of the people that wound up being here. The thrust of this festival, Moogfest, is named after Bob Moog, who designed synthesizers that you could actually have in your home. He made it possible for people to make music with electronics in a way that was much simpler. And so Brian Eno and Bob Moog are sort of the two pillars of lots of the music we saw happen.
It's interesting that you describe Bob Moog that way, because it's kind of similar to the way I think about Brian Eno, and we'll talk about more of that later, but let's get to some music first. Should we talk about Tim Hecker? I know that's one of our, one of our favorite sets of the weekend. Tim Hecker makes very beautiful ambient music. He has a new-ish CD this year that's called Rave Death 1972, and it's an album that contains a few suites of music. It's very calming to listen to. His live set was not.
No, I was going to say, yeah, not at all. It was intense.
Super, super intense.
Intense. And I'd like to talk about some of that, but let's listen to some Tim Hecker. This is actually from the festival. We'll have many of the things we'll play today are either from the festival concert recordings, of which we have many online. Some will be from records. So let's listen to this one from Tim Hecker.
Live at Moogfest.
Thank you.
of the things that I want to talk about is the level of volume that I'm hearing more and more, especially at electronic music concerts, and to the point of I have to wear earplugs.
All the time.
I hate wearing earplugs.
Yeah. I think what they want to do, I mean, it feels like what they want to do is not just, like, get you dancing, but they actually want to make parts of your body move. They want to those sound waves to hit you in the gut and sort of shake you. In order to do that, it has to be incredibly loud.
And I think at the expense of, and you look around the room and you see people filled with things in their ears, at the expense of the fidelity. In other words, I think... And I'm going to write something about this. I'll put it on the blog. It has to do with the responsibility of volume, which is, I think they're making people deaf to some point. And I don't want to sound like an old fart, because I've gone to a gazillion shows. But what synthesizers can do that other instruments can't do are piercing sounds that are so pure, they hurt. And I was... For Tim Hecker said, I think I was 400, 500 feet from those speakers. And there were people who were 30 feet from those speakers. And I don't want to denigrate Tim Hecker, but it is something I want to go to. Because his music was visceral. It was powerful. It was amazing that it was that loud. However, there was that one issue for me that came up over and over again.
It is a thing that you sort of had to grapple with all weekend, just in terms of... both the volume and also just the sort of relentlessness of some of those beats. I know that another person that you really really liked, I didn't see as much of his set as you did, was Amon Tobin, who has similarly just like incredibly intense beats. Like every time bass hits, it's like somebody's dropping like just a ton of bricks. Like not even a ton of bricks, a ton of some material that I've never heard of before. That's incredibly dense.
If you had said to a composer, I want you to make the sound of the world falling apart, this is what it would have been. This is the music, and he's a London-based, Brighton, I think. Okay, electronic musician, and I think it sounded like the most futuristic, and I hate using the word futuristic with electronic music because it conjures up these images of sci-fi movies and stuff. But
yeah,
what I mean by that is it is like much of the electronic music. It lets go of the song form, no verse, chorus, and all that. That's not new to electronic music. But texturally, it's the sound is just on another plane. Unlike most music that we listen to,
it's helped along to a great degree by the visuals. I mean, his set in particular
was the most stunning visuals.
We should talk about that a little bit. Yeah, it's not only incredibly loud and incredibly intense sound, but he has made this stage. I guess it's a set of cubes that are set on top of each other.
Yeah, imagine taking better? Well, I'll try. Imagine taking sugar cubes. You're sitting in a restaurant, and you on the table are 100 sugar cubes, and you start to stack them, and you make what looks like maybe cities and buildings and so forth. Only now you've got this surface that is it's not made of sugar cubes. It's made of probably framing and fabric, of which projections are projected onto in a precise way.
Incredibly precise.
Yeah, and these projections are as futuristic as the music. They really work well together. All the while, he's sitting inside one of the sugar cubes, and sort of when they put on a light, you can see this guy hovering in the middle of this stacked set of cubes playing his electronic music, and it really does look otherworldly.
It does.
Because you get some of the performers who they may as well be backstage. There's no lighting, you know, and there's no presence to them on stage other than they happen to be there, right? But Amon Tobin,
I mean, the minute that he came out on stage, like it was like the audience made it was a collective gasp in the audience. I was standing right in the middle of people, and nobody was looking anywhere but right up on stage. It was kind of amazing.
Let's listen to the opening cut to the Amon Tobin record. The record's called
ISAM.
And you'll hear what I mean by the sounds of the world falling apart. And then online, we'll put up some pictures of what this looks like. And I think actually you may even want to go take a peek at a YouTube video of this, because it really is something to behold. Thank you. So that's sort of the sound of the future in many ways, I think.
Possibly the apocalypse.
Yes, and that's Imman Tobin. One thing that was there was something very, very old, something I saw 30 years ago, which was suicide.
Yeah, you think of electronic music being sort of relentlessly new. This festival really sort of goes back. I mean, it appreciates, you would expect this with a festival named after Bob Moog, but it appreciates the people who have sort of laid the groundwork for the youngsters who are coming up.
And what Ashley Capps, one of the people who helped organize this entire festival, said in an interview we did, and you can listen to it online on the All Songs blog, was the festival when it got started, Moogfest, when it got started, was a day in New York City, and it really honored the older music that was being made, the Keith Emersons of the world, the Yeses of the world, the people who used Moog synthesizers. And there's great intent in this festival to bring all of the new music's being made. And so you wind up with a band like Suicide, a band that was playing 30 years ago in New York City. It seemed very unusual, that music did. It's a, you know, one instrumentalist, Martin Rev, who is playing, you know, distorted keyboards and a distorted drum machine, basically. And then Alan Vega, who sort of is almost a rockabilly singer, very like a minimalist rockabilly singer, right? And that music completely fit in with the new stuff I was going to hear.
Yeah, I mean, I was just listening to you describe that. I was thinking that could be any number of bands that I've heard in just in the last 6 months. I mean, like the two person minimalist electronic
right.
musician with some sort of stylized front person. It's a standard of the
that's right.
of the internet era.
And when they happened, when they existed, Suicide, they were unlike anyone else. But who knew that their influence would last as long as it did. Alan Vega, no spring chicken. He's in his early 70s, and he's up there doing the same exact thing that he did, you know, talking about girls and talking about how much he wants them at the age of 73. You know, it's really a sight to see, and I'm not sure what people who didn't really know that thought of them, other than to say that people were rooting them on. I mean, the crowd seemed to love them.
Ghost Rider, motorcycle hero. Baby, 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 he's a looking so cute. Sneaking round in a blue jumpsuit. Ghost Rider, motorcycle hero. Baby, 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 he's a-blazing away. Like a star, star, star in the universe. Ghost Rider, motorcycle hero. Baby, 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 he's a-screaming the truth. America's killing its youth. Beep, 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 he's screaming away. America, America is killing its youth. America, America is killing its youth. Ghost Rider. Ghost Rider.
Yeah, you got the sense with a number of the acts that Moogfest started as a way to appreciate the bands that were older that had been using this equipment for such a long time. People didn't show up just to see young, hot acts. They didn't show up just to sort of like appreciate the acts had been around for a long time. There was a huge turnout for Tangerine Dream.
Yes, and I was surprised how well that music held up too, because for a while it didn't for me. For a while it felt like very. That space rock stuff felt very, very weighty and over. And yet, coming here and hearing that band, I mean, they have a few new members in the group, but it's basically the same drawn-out space rock music that they were playing, and it was beautiful. It fit right in.
It was an hour and a half of basically a single song that just morphed into different sounds and tunes. Yeah, it was very impressive that they're a tight group, and for an hour and a half they sort of carried you along. We should listen to some of that.
So one thing about Tangerine Dream is, and just in the descriptor, I think that people use for them, space rock, is the word rock. And it's one of the things that just is very absent from most of the music here, with some exceptions. You know, you have your like St. Vincent.
St. Vincent, yeah, played a big set, extremely well attended in the second largest venue that they have here. Some bands that like they could be at almost any festival. I mean, Alice Sound is one.
Antlers.
Antlers are another. Yeah, exactly. TV on the Radio always have been a band with a slightly experimental, abrasive edge, especially in concert. They have a very big, loud sort of. Relentless sound. Let's hear a little bit of the sound of the Atlas Sound set. Atlas Sound played. That's Bradford Cox from Deer Hunter. It's his solo project. He played a set on an acoustic guitar at Orange Peel, a club here in Asheville, North Carolina.
What did you want to see? What did you want to be when you grew up? What did you want to see? What did you want to be? What did you want to see? What did you want to be when you grew up? What did you want to see?
So that's Atlas Sound. One of the things, and we're sitting in this room, I'm here with Jacob Gans, and we're sitting in this room, this installation of 77 million paintings, a room I actually just want to move into. It really is just a phenomenal, phenomenal piece. And one thing Brian Eno did was he gave a couple of talks. One was a press conference, and one, and then he did this one called an illustrative talk. And first of all, funny guy, right?
Who knew?
Yeah, who knew? And so that's one, but very thoughtful. And one of the things he talks about, because he makes something, and we're hearing it right now, it's called generative music. Music that basically sets up a bunch of rules, and those rules just run, and when they run, they make the music. So in this case, we are in a room with CD boom boxes all over the room, which each has a CD that's on random repeat, and each CD has different elements on it, and it will never be the same twice. In the old days, folks like Terry Riley, who was at this festival, did music again with looping, with patterns that looped, but they didn't loop simultaneously. They looped, one might be 8 seconds long, and one might be 12 seconds long, and one might be 18 seconds long, and so that they all come around at different times, and as they're constantly playing together, they are making new things. And
The way that Brian Eno described this is that that I found really interesting in his talk was that he talked about the way that that this puts some of the it puts some of the responsibility for the composition on the listener, because there's so much going on, there are so many things that you have to decide whether or not what you're hearing is appealing or something that's abrasive, or it's something that you like, or something that you don't like, and it puts you in the position of sort of being a part of the composition as it unfolds. And he talked about that as sort of the balance between control and surrender.
And some of that is the composer is thought of as the ultimate controller of writing music. But what he wants to do is set up a system where he might set up the rules, but then he lets go. He surrenders to the processes set up. He calls them machines in a way, and
systems is what he is.
Yeah,
word.
Right. And so Terry Riley at this festival is one of the people who most inspired Eno, and that was what was so amazing about this. You have Bob Moog making these instruments, and you have someone like Riley, who in 1968 did a piece called In C. On an electronic instrument, that inspired someone like Brian Eno, who went on to inspire all these other people. And Terry Riley was here with his son Gian, who's a brilliant guitar player, by the way. And they made these pieces of music. Some were bluesy pieces that Riley sang, which was, I think, surprising to many who have never heard him sing. Riley was here at Big White Beard, Cowboy Hat. Quite a character. And some of them were some of the electronic pieces that were just fantastic. Thank you.
was Terry and Guion Riley. There was a lot of really brilliant electronic music being played. There was a lot of really nice pop. There was a lot of good indie music that was played. Two of the sets that I found, as far as pure enjoyment goes, were two DJ sets. And that's always a little bit tough when you're, you know, like when you go to see performances in the midst of a festival with 60 or so performers, and you come wanting to see somebody give everything, you know, like present something that's amazing. Somebody like a Montobin can, you know, like bring his stage. A DJ often just stands behind turntables and does nothing. And two of those sets were two of my favorites. Flying Lotus's set on Friday night, which was as choppy and abrasive sometimes as his music can be, but also very recognizably fun and super high energy. He won over a huge crowd.
In a seated auditorium where nobody was seated.
In a seated auditorium where absolutely no one was seated. Everybody was pushed up to the front of the stage. He doesn't loop samples the way that many DJs do. He'll create beats and then drop in slightly recognizable sounds from songs that you might know. He played a bit of a Radiohead song and that was mostly identifiable by the fact that it sounded buzzy and clattery like a Radiohead song, and then 15 seconds later you hear a bit of Tom York's voice, and it just sort of serves as confirmation that he's pulling from all these different sources and using them all to sort of his own ends. The complete opposite of that was the other set that I saw just tonight. That's James Murphy and Pat Mahoney of LCD Sound System.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Playing like what was basically an hour and a half long disco set.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, and like, and that was one of the interesting things about this festival. You have people, and it seems like the same audience at all of these shows, who are as down to see like some pretty hardcore experimental electronic music, or totally okay just partying.
And this festival draws from not just Asheville, which is an amazing community, I have to say. This is a great little city filled with lots of arts, and you know, there's just a great vibe about this place. I come up here in the summertime for a music camp. This Celtic music is where I come, and now I'm here for the Electronic Music Festival. Today I was driving around Asheville listening to a Celtic music show, a local Celtic music show, while going from venue to venue for the electronic music. It really hits my sweet spot. And of course, the other part of that sweet spot that's there is that Moog made his home here, taught here. He died 6 years ago, but he has a living, thriving factory and place of designing new instruments. The whole Moog headquarters is in Asheville. You could see that the heart of American electronic music is somehow connected to this very place.
Yeah, I mean, you could see that just in the emails and tweets that I was getting from you that were like, Moby is going to be at the Moog factory, Brian Eno is going to be at the Moog factory. I mean, like, you can tell that these people, like, that, you know, Asheville's kind of in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
It's out in western North Carolina, and it sort of feels like people are, the musicians who come here, like, it feels like there's a good reason for them to stick around for the few days that the festival happens.
If I had to think of this set that of a group that I'd never seen before that I really was really taken by, I'd have to go with The Field. They were a band that set up a groove, and they worked that groove and textures wise and so forth. There was so much going on. It was such a driving band.
Yeah, and it's interesting because Axel Wellner is the name of the man who records as The Field. And it definitely could have been one of those sets where it's just a guy standing behind a computer without much presentation, and he made the decision to have a live drummer and a bassist, and
made,
like,
all the world.
And it was a huge sound, very intense, really deep and heavy, and it sounded completely different than it did on the record.
Let's go out on The Field. Let's play some of that. A crowd that was there was a colorful crowd, too.
Colorful crowd, yeah. We have to mention that it was Halloween weekend here in Asheville. I feel like I spent the first day getting used to the fact that all these people were dressed up because it was Halloween and not just because it was a crazy electronic festival. And
right.
By the end of the festival, I was seeing people wearing glow sticks for headbands and pacifiers and...
Yeah, I was playing a little game, hipster or Halloween.
Exactly. I just thought that they were dressed up like my friends from college.
That's right. Well, this is wonderful. A great festival. Concerts will be up online. Some will be up online by the time the show goes up. Others may trickle in depending on when we get the permissions to put them up and get them mixed and all that stuff. So keep an eye out for Moogfest stuff. We did a number of blog posts too that are I think worth going back and reading a little more in depth about Eno's talk, a little more, a couple of videos from the Moog headquarters. I hope we come back next year. I think this is the beginning of an annual event, my friend.
Yeah, it's a really nice little festival. It's sort of a perfect little weekend.
Great. I'm Bob Boylan for NPR Music, along with Jacob Gans. It's All Songs Considered.